S. Yes, I am kind of disoriented. I haven't gotten used to things around here yet. Dr. N. That's fine, just take your time and let the figure float toward you as you float toward it. S. Long pause, and then with a loud horrified exclamation, oh, God. No. Dr. N. Startled by this outcry, what's going on? S. Subject's body begins to shake uncontrollably, oh, oh, Lord Almighty. IT's the devil. I knew IT. I've gone to hell. Dr. N. Grasping subject by the shoulders, now, take a deep breath and try to relax as we go through this together, then, softly, you are not in hell. S. Cuts in with a shrill tone of voice, oh, yeah, then why do one see the devil right in front of me? Dr. N. My subject's face is now covered in sweat and I use a tissue to wipe some of it away while continuing to reassure, try to calm yourself, there is some misinterpretation here and we will find it soon. S. Paying no attention to me, the subject now begins to moan while rocking back and forth, oh ooh ooh, it's over for me, I'm in hell. Dr. N. I break in now more forcefully, tell me exactly what you see. S. Whispering at first and then loudly, A. Being, demonic, reddish green face, horns, wild-eyed, fangs, the facial skin is like charred wood, oh sweet Jesus, why me of all people, who spoke so much in your name? Dr. N. What else do you see? S. With loathing, what else is there to see? Can't you understand? I'm in front of the devil. Dr. N. Quickly, I meant the rest of the body. Look below the head and tell me what you see. S. With a violent shudder, nothing, just a wispy ghost-like body. Dr. N. Stay with me. Doesn't this seem unusual to you, that the devil would appear with no body? Move forward in time rapidly now and tell me what this figure does. S. My subject's body jerks up violently and then with a great sigh of relief he sags back into the chair, oh, that bastard, I might have known, it's Scanlan. He is taking his mask off and smiling wickedly at me, Dr. N. Now I can relax, who is Scanlan? S. My guide. This is his crude idea of a joke. Dr. N. What does Scanlan really look like now? S. Tall, aquiline features. Grey hair, full of mischief-making, as usual, laughs with bravado, but still not fully recovered, I should have known. He caught me unawares this time. Dr. N., does Scanlan make a habit of this sort of thing? Why frighten you just as you were coming into the spirit world a little disoriented? S., defensively, listen, he is a great teacher. That's his way. He has got our whole group using masks but he knows one don't like them much. Dr. N., tell me why Scanlan used a devil's mask to scare you right after this life. Talk to him now. Note, I am quiet for a few moments while my subject mentally connects with Scanlan. S., after a period of silence, I had it coming. Oh, I know it. I spent a lifetime preaching about the devil, scaring good people, telling them they were going to hell if they didn't pay attention to me. Scanlan gave me a dose of my own medicine. Dr. N., and how do you feel now about his methods? S., chagrined, he made his point. Dr. N., I want to ask you a blunt question. Did you really believe what you told your parishioners about seeing demonic forces everywhere, or were you motivated by something else? S., intensely, no, no. I believed what I was saying about evil being everywhere in every person. I was not a hypocrite. Dr. N., are you sure it wasn't false piety? You did not pretend to feel and be what you were not? S., no. I believed it. My undoing was my method of preaching and the love of the power over others that this ability gave me. Yes, I admit that failing, one made life miserable for some of my flock, not seeing the essential goodness in people. I was always suspicious because of my obsession with evil and this corrupted me. Dr. N., do you feel part of what you became was the result of the body you chose in this life? S., in a flat voice, yes, I lack restraint. I chose a body with a feisty mind and allowed myself to be swept away. I was too confrontational as a preacher. Dr. N., and do you know why your soul mind chose to enter into this partnership in the body of a preacher who constantly intimidated people? I let it happen because it felt good to be in control. I was afraid of not being taken seriously enough. Dr. N., you were worried about the loss of control? S. Long pause. Yes, that one would be inadequate. Dr. N., by his use of a devil's mask, do you think Scanlan demeans what you stood for in the church? S. No, that's my teacher's way. I chose the body of a minister and he helped me with all this. One took a wrong turn, it was not the wrong path. My faith was not a bad thing, but I became misguided and I misguided others. Scanlan wants me to see what it feels like to scare people rather than reason with them. He wanted me to feel the same fear that I gave to others. Note, I now move my subject into a group setting to learn more about how Scanlan teaches his students through the use of masks. Dr. N., who is the first person who comes to you? S., hesitates and is wary. It's an angel, soft glowing white, wings. Then, with recognition, okay, I'm on to all of you. Enough. Dr. N., who is this angel? S., my dear friend, Diane. She has removed her angel's mask and is laughing and hugging me. Dr. N., I'm a little confused. Souls can assume any shape or create any features they want. Why bother with masks? S., the mask is similar to a figure of speech, a symbol one can hold in the hand to put on and pull off for effect. Diane is offsetting Scanlan's huge joke by being a loving angel for me while the others are laughing at what happened to me. Dr. N., what kind of individual is Diane? S., very loving and full of humor. She likes practical jokes, as does most of my group. They all know I take things too seriously. I don't like the masks very much, so they tease me. Dr. N., during your lessons, are masks used as a means of teaching about right and wrong behavior? S., yes, they are a means of acknowledgement of good or poor thinking, misconceptions. They identify aspects of our character which are positive and those which are undesirable, and we can role play with each other. Dr. N., did Scanlan originate the use of this sort of prop for your group lessons? S., laughs, yes, and what he does makes an impression. This was a strange case, and 111 admit Scanlan had me going for a few minutes when one thought this client was taking me to a place no other had before. The treatment this subject received at the gateway by the use of a devil mask is an anomaly. Moreover, I have never encountered a guide whose behavior had such extravagance and provocation. In the chapters ahead, we will see how drama plays an important part in soul group activity. The use of masks by Scanlan's group as a symbolic gesture to embody a belief system is rather unique in my experience. Masks do have a long tradition in our cultural life, where personification of divine and demonic power has been used to mock spirits which are feared and honor those spirits that are venerated. The devil mask has a history of tribal exorcism toward a harmful spirit. Case 18 is one where mythic spiritual practices were taken from Earth by a soul group director to serve as a wake-up call for his students. Spiritual energy restoration, soul energy. We cannot define the soul in a physical way because to do so would establish limits on something that seems to have none. I see the soul as intelligent light energy. This energy appears to function as vibrational waves similar to electromagnetic force but without the limitations of charged particles of matter. Soul energy does not appear to be uniform. Like a fingerprint, each soul has a unique identity in its formation, composition and vibrational distribution. I am able to discern soul properties of development by color tones, yet none of this defines what the soul is as an entity. From years of study on how the soul interacts within a variety of human minds over many incarnations, and what it subsequently does in the spirit world, one have come to know something of its yearnings for perfection. This does not tell me what the soul is either. To fully understand soul energy, We would need to know all the aspects of its creation and, indeed, the consciousness of its source. This is a perfection that I cannot know, despite all my efforts investigating the mysteries of life after death. I am left then with examining the actions of this profound energy substance and how it reacts to people and events and what it is striving to do in both physical and mental environments. If the soul's existence begins and is molded by pure thought, it is sustained by that thought as an immortal being. The soul's individual character enables it to influence its physical environment to give greater harmony and balance to life. Souls are an expression of beauty, imagination and creativity. The ancient Egyptians said that to begin to understand the soul, one must listen to the heart. I think they were right. Standard treatment at the gateway, when we cross over and are met by our guides, I find the techniques they use at initial contact fall into two general categories. 1. Envelopment. Here returning souls are completely cloaked by a large circular mass of their guide's powerful energy. As the soul and guide come together, the soul feels as though they both are encased in a bubble. This is the more common method, which my subjects describe as pure ecstasy. 2. The focus effect. This alternate procedure of initial contact is administered a little differently. As the guide approaches, energy is applied to certain points at the edges of the soul's etheric body from any direction of the guide's choosing. We might be taken by the hand or held by the tops of our shoulders from a side position. Healing begins from a specific point of the etheric body in the form of a brushing caress followed by deep penetration. The choice of procedures depends on the preference of the guide and the condition of our soul energy at the time. In both instances, there is an immediate infusion of potent, invigorating energy while we are projected forward. This is the introductory phase of the journey to our eventual spiritual destination. The more advanced souls, especially if they are undamaged, usually do not require assistance from a loving energy force. A review of the techniques employed by Case 1 on his wife, Alice, demonstrates elements of both the focus effect and envelopment on a living person by someone who is not yet a guide. Other cases in the last chapter indicate this is one way we begin our training in the use of healing energy before acquiring the status of a guide. During the exhilarating moments after initial contact, our guides might also expertly apply what I call energy penetration. This follow-up effect of energy transference has been described as being similar to the percolating of coffee. In Case 8, a soul used an energy filtration process involving smell on her husband, Charles, healing emotional and physical injury, both in and out of the spirit world, emanates from a source of goodness. Positive energy flows to every part of the soul's being from the sender, whose own essence and wisdom is transmitted as well. My subjects are unable to explain the beauty and subtlety of this assimilation except to say it resembles the flowing of rejuvenating electricity. Emergency treatment at the gateway. When souls arrive at the gateway to the spirit world with energy that is in a deteriorated state, some of our guides engage in emergency healing. This is both a physical and mental healing exercise that takes place before the soul moves any further into the spirit world. One of my clients died in an auto accident in his last life where his leg was severed. He told me what occurred at the gateway as a result of this experience. When I reached the gateway, my guide saw the gaps in my energy aura and proceeded at once to push their damaged energy back into place. He molded it as clay to fill, reshape and smooth out the rough edges and broken intervals to make me whole again. The etheric, or soul body, is an outline of our old physical body which souls take into the spirit world. Essentially, it is an imprint of a human form we have not shed yet, like the skin of a reptile. This is not a permanent condition, although we might naturally create it later as a colorful, luminescent shape of energy. We know damaged body imprints from a past life can influence the current physical form of some people and less properly deprogrammed, so why not the reverse? There are souls who shed their body form completely at the moment of death. However, many souls with physical and emotional scars from life carry the imprint of this damaged energy back home. In terms of afflictions and soul healing, I learn a lot from the students as well as the teachers in the spirit world. My next case was a rather unusual one for me, where a student guide was unable to handle damaged energy properly at the gate. My subject in this case had just come off a difficult life after being blown up in an artillery bombardment during a battle in World War I. Case 19, Dr. N. As you pass into the bright light following your death in the mud and rain of this battlefield, what do you see? S. A figure coming toward me dressed in a white robe. Dr. N. Who is this figure? S. I see Kate. She is a new teacher, recently assigned to our group. Dr. N. Describe her appearance and what she is communicating to you as she comes closer. S. She has a young, rather plain face with a large forehead. Kate radiates peace. I can feel it, but there is a concern too, and laughs. She won't come close to me. Dr. N. Why not? S. My energy is in bad shape. She says to me, Zed, you should be healing yourself. Dr. N. Why doesn't she help in this endeavor, Zed? S. Laughs again loudly. Kate does not want to get near all my scrambled negative energy from the war and the killing. Dr. N. I have never heard of a guide shying away from such a responsibility with disassembled energy, Zed. Is she afraid of contamination? S. Still laughing. Something like that. You have to understand, Kate is still rather new at this sort of work. She is not happy with herself, I can see that. Dr. N. Describe what your energy looks like right now. S. My energy is a mess. It is in chunks, black blocks, irregular, totally skewed out of alignment. Dr. N. Is this because you didn't escape from your body fast enough at the moment of death? S. For sure. My unit was taken by surprise. I normally cut loose from the body when I see death coming. Note, this case and many others have taught me that souls often leave their bodies seconds before a violent death. Dr. N. Well, can't Kate lend some assistance in rearranging your energy? S. She tries. A little. I guess it's too much for her at the moment. Dr. N. So, what do you do? S. I begin to take her suggestion and try to help myself. I'm not doing too well. It's so scrambled. Then a powerful stream of energy hits me like water from a fire hose, and it helps me begin to reshape myself and push out some of the negative crap from that battle. Dr. N. I have heard of a place where energy is showered upon newly returned, damaged souls. Is that where you are now? S. Laughing. I guess so. It's from my guide, Bella. I can see him now. He is a real pro at this kind of thing. He is standing behind Kate, helping her. Dr. N. Then what happens to you? S. Bella fades away and Kate comes close to me and puts her arms around me, and we start to talk as she leads me away. Dr. N. Deliberately provoking. Do you have any confidence in Kate after she treated you like some sort of leper? S. Frowns at me severely. Oh, come on, that's a mite strong. It won't be long before she gets the hang of working with this kind of messed up energy. I like her a lot. She has many gifts. Right now, mechanics isn't one of them. Recovery areas for the less damaged soul, regardless of the specific energy treatment received by the soul at the gateway to the spirit world, most all returning souls will continue on to some sort of healing station before finally joining their groups. All but the most advanced souls crossing back into the spirit world are met by benevolent spirits who make contact with their positive energy and escort needy souls to quiet recovery areas. It is only the more highly developed souls, with energy patterns that are still strong after their incarnations, who return directly to their regular activities. The more advanced souls appear to get over hardship more quickly than others after a life. One man told me, most of the people I work with must stop and rest, but I don't need anything. I'm in too much of a hurry to get back and continue my program. Most recovery areas for the returning soul involve some kind of orientation back to the spirit world. It may be intense or moderate in scope, depending upon the condition of the soul. This usually includes a preliminary debriefing of the life just completed. Much more in-depth counseling will take place later with guides in group conferences and, with our Council of Elders. I have written about these orientation procedures in Journey of Souls. The surroundings of recovery areas are identifiable earthly settings created out of our memories and what spiritual guides feel will promote healing. Orientation environments are not the same after each of our lives. One woman had the following to say: after dying in a German concentration camp in 1944, there are subtle differences in physical layout, depending upon the life one has just lived. Because I have just returned from a life filled with horror, cold and bleakness, everything is very bright to lighten my sorrow. There is even a comfortable fire next to me, so I'll have the feeling of added warmth and cheerfulness. Upon returning to the spirit world, often my subjects describe themselves as being in a garden setting, while others might say they are in a crystalline enclosure. The garden presents a scene of beauty and serenity, but what does crystal represent? It is not just in the orientation rooms that one hears about crystals. Crystal caves, for example, appear in the minds of some people who are spending time alone in reflection right after a life is over. Here is a typical statement about a crystal recovery center: my place of recovery is crystalline in composition, because it helps me connect my thoughts. The crystal walls have multicolored stones which reflect prisms of light. The geometric angles of these crystals send out moving bands of light which crisscross around and bring clarity to my thoughts. After talking to a number of clients out of trance, and with others who are knowledgeable about crystals, I came to realize that crystals represent thought enhancement through a balancing of energy. As a shamanic tool, the crystal is supposed to assist in tuning our vibrational pattern into a universal energy force while releasing negative energy. Bringing forth wisdom from an expanded consciousness through healing is the primary reason for being in a place of spiritual recovery. The next example involves a garden setting. I had a client who had been working on humility for many lives. In earlier incarnations, usually as a man, this soul had been caught up with host bodies that had become haughty, arrogant and even ruthless during my subject's occupancy. In a complete turnaround, this person's last life had been one of acceptance that bordered on passivity. Since this life was so out of character for my client, there was a feeling of failure when this soul reached the recovery area. I was then given this account: I am in a beautiful circular garden with willow trees and a pond with ducks in it. There is such tranquility here, and this scene softens the feelings of discouragement I have over my last performance. My guide, Makil, brings me to a marble bench under an arbor draped with vines and flowers. I am so down over my wasted life because I overcompensated at every turn, going from one extreme to another. Makil smiles and offers me refreshments. We drink nectar and eat fruit together and watch the ducks. While we do this, the aura of my old physical body moves further away from me. I begin to feel as though I am taking in his powerful energy as oxygen after a near drowning. Makil is a gracious host and he knows I need nourishment because I am judging myself in such a critical manner. I am always harder on myself than he is. We talk about my overcorrections of past mistakes and what I wanted to do that didn't get done, or was only partially completed. Makil offers encouragement that I still learned from this life, which will make the next one better. He explains the important thing was that I was not afraid to change. The whole garden atmosphere is so relaxing. I am already feeling better. From cases such as this, I have learned that our guides use the sense memory we had in our physical bodies to assist in our recovery. There are many ways to achieve this, such as the use of taste memory by Makil in the above case. I have also listened to descriptive scenes involving touch and smell. After receiving streams of bright white liquid energy, there have been subjects who describe additional treatments involving the sensations of sound and multicolored lights. After my cleansing shower, I move to an adjacent room to the place of rebalancing. While I float to the center of this enclosure, I see a vast array of spotlights overhead. One hear my name called, Banyan, are you ready? When I give my assent, sounds vibrate into me which resonate like tuning forks until the pitch is just right to make my energy bubble, like frothy soap suds. It feels wonderful. Then the spotlights come on one at a time. In the beginning I am scanned by an intense beam of healing green light. It casts a circle around me as if I were on a stage. This light is designed to pick up my level of displaced energy, to see what I have lost or damaged, and make corrections. I think this is more effective because my energy is bubbling from the sound vibrations. Then I receive a wash of gold light for strength and blue for awareness. Finally, my own pinkish-white color is restored by one of the spotlights. It is soothing and loving, and I'm sorry when this is over. Regenerating severely damaged souls. There are certain displaced souls who have become so contaminated by their host bodies that they require special handling. In life they became destructive to others and themselves. This spectrum of behavior would primarily include souls who have been associated with evil acts that caused harm to other people through deliberate malice. There are souls who slowly become more contaminated from a series of lifetimes, while others are totally overcome by one body alone. In either case, these souls are taken to places of isolation where their energy undergoes a more radical treatment plan than with the typical returning soul. Contamination of the soul can take many forms and involve different grades of severity during an incarnation. A difficult host body might cause the less experienced soul to return with damaged energy, where a more advanced being would survive the same situation relatively intact. The average soul's energy will become shadowed when it has lived within a host body obsessed by constant fear and rage. The question is, by how much? Our thoughts, feelings, moods and attitudes are mediated by body chemicals which are released through signals of perceived threats and danger from the brain. Fight or flight mechanisms come from our primitive brain, not from the soul. The soul has a great capacity to control our biological and emotional reactions to life, but many souls are unable to regulate a dysfunctional brain. Souls display these scars when they leave a body that has deteriorated in this fashion. I have my own theory of madness. The soul comes into the fetus and begins its fusion with the human mind by the time the baby is born. If this child matures into an adult with organic brain syndromes, psychosis, or major affective disorders, abnormal behavior is the result. The struggling soul does not fully assimilate. And this soul can no longer control the aberrant behavior of its body, the two personas begin to separate into a dissociated personality. There may be many physical, emotional and environmental factors that contribute to a person becoming a danger to themselves and others. Here, the combined self has been damaged. One of the red flags for souls who are losing their capacity to regulate deviant human beings is when they have had a series of lives in bodies demonstrating a lack of intimacy and displaying tendencies toward violence. This has a domino effect with the soul asking for the same sort of body to overcome the last one. Because we have free will, our guides are indulgent. A soul is not excused from responsibility for a disturbed human mind it is unable to regulate because it is a part of that mind. The problem for slow learner souls is they may have had a series of prior life struggles before occupying a body that escalated wrongdoing to a new level of evil. What happens to these disturbed souls when they return to the spirit world? I will begin with a quote from a client giving me an outsider's view of a place where severely damaged souls are taken. Some of my subjects call this area the City of Shadows. It is here where negative energy is erased. Since this is the place where so many souls are concentrated who have negative energy, it is dark to those of us outside. We can't go into this place where souls who have been associated with horror are undergoing alteration. And we would not want to go there anyway. It is a place of healing, but from a distance it has the appearance of a dark sea, while I am looking at it from a bright, sandy beach. All the light around this area is brighter in contrast because positive energy defines the greater goodness of bright light. When you look at the darkness carefully, you see it is not totally black but a mixture of deep green. We know this is an aspect of the combined forces of the healers working here. We also know that souls who are taken to this area are not exonerated.